Hey there, welcome to Conversations for Financial Professionals, a podcast to help shape the next generation of financial advice. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. Today's conversation is with Cameron Huddleston, who is an award-winning journalist with nearly 20 years of experience writing about personal finance. Her work has been seen in Forbes, Kiplinger's, Chicago Tribune, MSNBC, Yahoo, all over the place. And she has her own book, Mom and Dad, We Need to Talk: How to Have Essential Conversations with Your Parents About Their Finances. I brought Cameron on because I've been knowing her for a while, and as a member of the media, she has a lot of insight as to how financial professionals can build their brand by using relationships and building relationships with the media. We talk about all types of things today, including some of the techniques she would recommend for financial professionals and financial planners to use in order to develop a relationship with media. Also, we talk about how to get your personal brand out there and how to leverage the power of social media. And even she includes some sites that she would recommend for you to be on and if you want to do this. And we also talk about whether or not you should start your own blog, how that helps, whether or not members of the media consider that competition or not. And last but not least, we talk about her personal story and own branding, ups and downs as she's been able to get her book out there as a new author. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this conversation. You'll leave this conversation with the takeaway of how hard work really enables you to build your brand beyond anything else, so that you can create deeper relationships with your ideal clients and serve them in a more meaningful way. Enjoy this conversation. All right, welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where this podcast is shaping the next generation of financial advice. Today, we have Cameron Huddleston. Cameron, you are a award-winning journalist with nearly 20 years of experience about writing personal finance. You've been in Forbes and Kiplinger's and Chicago Tribune and all over the place. You also are a recent author. Congratulations on that. Mom and Dad, We Need to Talk: How to Have Essential Conversations with Your Parents About Their Finances. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is great. I am really, really eager to have this conversation, but I first have to ask, how are you managing with all that's going on? At the time of this recording, we're 3 days before the end of 2020. How are you managing with this weird year that we've had?
To be honest, I've had to dial back. I can't write as much because I have kids who are doing online school. And so, you know, even before, I had somewhat of a short workday. I would squeeze in all my work while my kids are at school and then go pick them up and drive them around to their activities. Mm-hmm. Now they're home all day. And so it's a challenge. And for me, that's meant having to say no to writing assignments just because I know that I can't get as much work done as I used to. So,
yeah. This is, I think everybody's kind of figuring out this hashtag WFH, and it's going to be one of the themes going forward, even to 2021. But, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on is that as a new entrepreneur, I answered a Help a Reporter Out Harrow post, and I don't even know if this is still around. Maybe you can inform our viewers, but this is this whole kind of system to take media members of the media, and connect them with experts, professionals in different areas, in this particular instance, finance. And that's how we eventually started working together and kind of befriended one another. And so long story short, I think because of our interaction and because of what I know of you from a professional standpoint, I think you are well able to kind of speak to using media to boost your personal brand as an advisor, as a young advisor, as an already existing advisor, and things of that nature. So again, I'm super, super curious as some to your thoughts today, and glad that you're on with us.
Well, I'm excited to talk about this topic because I think it's important. And I'm not saying that just because I'm a member of the media, but I, you know, because I've been writing about personal finance for so long, and I have worked with so many financial planners over the year, I do see a benefit in trying to get yourself out there, get yourself recognized as an expert, you know, getting quoted by the media, going on TV, doing radio interviews, doing podcast interviews. I do think there's a benefit in that for financial planners.
Let's take what the state of our world, what everybody's dealing with from a, you know, a very human level is the pandemic, right? I think the pandemic presents somewhat of a once in a lifetime type of opportunity from a lot of aspects. And I'm curious as to, just based on what you said, what may financial professionals be kind of missing if they're kind of maybe thinking traditionally about how they should reach out to their, you know, their ideal client or prospect or whatnot. But do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I think that the pandemic has forced the financial services industry overall to make a shift. I'm just going to use insurance as an example because I write a lot about insurance for Forbes. So, I mean, very traditional industry, and it was very much face to face. And the pandemic forced insurance companies to really speed up the process of taking things online. There was already a shift beginning where there are online insurance companies where you can go online and get your quote and do everything just from your computer. But a lot more insurers found that they had to suddenly make this transition, like meet with clients and reach out to people using Zoom, like we're doing right now. Yeah. And I think that it's probably true for financial planners too. You haven't been able to meet face to face. And so you've had to get used to meeting with clients virtually. And you know, it's certainly a change, but I think that offers a wonderful opportunity because a lot of times people don't have the time to take off from work and get in to meet with a financial planner face to face. I think this virtual meeting opens the doors to meeting with a lot more clients. That's my opinion. I don't know if you see the same, but I think that if you can meet with people at night or if you can meet with them on their lunch break and you just hop on the computer and do it, I think it makes the process a lot easier for a lot of people, especially young adults who are so used to doing things online and doing things virtually. And they're not as used to, you know, picking up the phone and making a phone call or going to an office and meeting face to face.
No, you make a lot of good points. I want to kind of unpack the notion around what I would feel, let's call an old school advisor or somebody of the old cloth or whatever, that may think that the only way to present a professional approach or demure to a prospective client is to be, you know, in a suit behind a desk in an office. And I just think it's kind of ironic that you bring this up because a lot of clients, to your point, have liked the level of convenience because people are busy. People's schedules change all the time. Oddly enough, when I started my business 4 years ago, took the approach of, I think I'm going to, you know, primarily be virtual. And if someone wants to meet with me, we'll give them that option instead of vice versa, just because, you know, the demographic I was after were, you know, at the time they were traveling 60-70% of the time, and it was just impossible to try to get in front of them on their calendar. So I think you make up a good point. And I think the point you're trying to make, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that COVID has possibly opened up a whole nother segment of business for advisors that are willing to maybe get out of your comfort zone and do the whole Zoom thing or virtual meeting. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I think so. And I think too, it lets you expand to even more potential clients. You're not limited to just the people in the town where you are located. You can reach out to anyone across your whole state, you know, wherever you're licensed to do business, you know, you can expand your reach. And I think too, especially for, you know, people who live in small towns who might not have access to a good financial planner, now they can, you know, hop on a Zoom call with a financial planner in the closest big city in their state. And so they have access to the service, whereas they might not have before because they couldn't spend an hour or two driving to that big city to meet with a financial planner.
Yeah. Let me rabbit trail just one more topic before we kind of get into the meat of our discussion about branding is, do you feel that as a consumer, and maybe you can speak directly to this if you have a financial planner or somebody that you work with, do you feel that there is some level of intimacy lost in the communication with a virtual relationship versus an in-person relationship? Because I know that's some of the pushback that I've heard, not only just on the practitioner side for financial professionals, but also on the client side, right? You know, I'd rather meet with a person, I want to look them in the face, and I want to sit down and have a meal with them, or whatever the deal is. Do you feel that there's maybe some intimacy lost?
I think it depends on the person and your comfort level with technology. I think, you know, back to the generations, I think older generations would probably be more likely to want that face-to-face interaction because that's what they've been brought up with. That's what they're accustomed to. Younger adults, not so much. I think perhaps, you know, millennials are more comfortable with using technology to meet. It's funny because years ago, I was talking with an editor at Money Magazine when it was actually a magazine before it went all online. And she was saying to me, you know, they wanted to have more, you know, middle-aged reporters like me in the office. Like they didn't want anyone working remotely. They wanted those reporters in the office to set an example to the younger reporters on how to actually get on the phone and talk to people, not just text. So, or not just send emails. And so I think, like I said, that it just kind of goes to that younger generation and how they don't necessarily have to have that face-to-face because they're so used to using technology to communicate. So I do think it depends.
No, well, it's funny you bring this up. My wife and I were having spent the day just recently with some college friends of ours. And we were saying, I was putting forth, you know, what I found is maybe pretty anecdotal. You know, I have a 19-year-old and I also have a 21-year-old and I have a 23-year-old, but the 19 and the 21-year-old are remarkably different in the ways they communicate. And I don't know if it was a cutoff in the years because of the age, but like literally my daughter was like trying to figure out something and she needed to get in contact with some people in a remote town in Texas. And she was like, I don't really know how to get in contact with them. I was like, did you call them? And she was like, oh yeah, call. Because it's not online. You can't do text. And she was like, how do I contact them? But I think to your point, you know, there's a generation obviously among us now that is their native language. Literally, as we're speaking English on this podcast, text is like their native language. And it's so weird as a just kind of a realization.
Right. And so I think, I'm sure older generations are missing that true face-to-face interaction. But I think younger adults, I do think it opens up an opportunity for them those who are more than happy to just hop online and do a call. And these people might not have wanted to actually go into an office because, you know, maybe they were in fact intimidated by that face-to-face interaction and they're just more comfortable sitting behind their computer. So it does depend on the generation. And, you know, certainly for those who like that face-to-face, hopefully we can get back to that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in 2021, but I do think the technology has made it possible to continue these relationships online.
No, I don't disagree. Okay, so let's get into some meat here because I know people want to hear your professional opinion around some branding. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get your brand message out, how you can help people. I know I've experimented with a lot of different ways over the years. And I would say, you know, nowadays, because of technology, the playing field is pretty level, right? You don't have to necessarily have Super Bowl ad money or, you know, full page Wall Street Journal ad money in order to kind of leverage the power of social media when it comes to attracting your ideal client. Let's talk about a couple of strategies that you kind of espouse obviously, you know, making partnerships with the media. Let's maybe start there and branch off into some things that advisors or financial professionals could be thinking about, you know, in a pandemic year or not, as far as getting their brand out.
Sure. I think what I want to do first is I want to dispel this misconception that it costs money to get quoted by the media. And I hear this from financial planners who don't have a lot of experience working with the media or have no experience. They often think, well, I've got to pay the local radio station to have my own radio show, or I've got to be a big sponsor with the local TV station to get on and be interviewed. And certainly, you know, if you have the money to do that, then, you know, go for it. And if you find that there's value in that, but you don't have to spend any money to get quoted by the media. It's entirely free. All it's going to take is your time. And it does take some time. I think you have to invest a little more time initially, but once you kind of get yourself out there and you get quoted by a couple of journalists, if you are a good source for them, and that means you respond quickly to their request, you give them the information they need, then they're going to keep coming back to you again and again, because they're going to know that you are a trusted, reliable source. And so you put that time in up front, and it's going to be easier down the road. You don't have to spend as much time again and again. And as you mentioned, a great free source. Well, I don't know if I want to call it great, because I know that people have mixed feelings about it, but certainly a free source is Haro, the helpareporter.com. It's free. You go in, you create an account, you sign up, and you subscribe to, for example, the business and finance alerts. And every day, three times a day, you're going to get alerts from Haro in your inbox. And it's going to be a list of queries from journalists who are looking for sources. But, you know, you spend a couple of minutes as soon as you get that email scanning through that list and seeing if there's anything you're interested in. And then you respond. And you respond.
I would just like to, go ahead. No, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it can be as simple as that. Now, they might use your quote. They might not. But you've given up, you know, 5-10 minutes of your day, or maybe, you know, no time, because there's nothing you want to respond to, but you give them a quick response, you know, answering their query. You don't say, hey, I'm available to talk to you, because that's not why reporters use that service. They want you to email them with an answer to their question, you know, give them a couple examples and stuff. So, but that's, it's a free way to start getting noticed.
No. And I think, so you bring up a lot of good points. I think you've kind of talked about, let's call it journalism etiquette 101, which is, you know, if you're going to participate in this, answer the question, be responsive, you know, meet the deadlines, because usually you guys are up against deadlines when you're creating these things. I do want to kind of unpack a little bit more, I hate to call it this, but I think it is this, because it's like any other relationship where you're getting value, and eventually it's kind of like you scratch my back, I scratch yours. But the dance of it, right? You know, I know that when I first started my business, there was Investopedia, there was Haro, there was a couple of others that literally part of my thing, since I didn't have a lot of clients, was carving out the first part of my day and going through some of these inquiries that I had subscribed through to see if, you know, did I have expertise already there? I wasn't going to try to go read up on anything necessarily, but did I have expertise already? And just that diligent practice is what allowed me to meet you and some other journalists that I contributed to over the years. So I want to talk about the dance a little bit, and maybe from your perspective, why you see financial professionals not willing to do the dance, or why they may be impatient, or maybe some feedback from an insider as to, you know, what you guys are dealing with on the other side, right? You're probably getting thousands of inquiries or hundreds of inquiries or whatever.
Sure. So it does take effort on your part, you know, to, you know, either, you know, subscribe to Haro and respond to those queries, to connect with journalists on social media or LinkedIn. And I have met sources that way. Social media is a great way to connect with journalists. If you're not on Twitter, you should get on Twitter, because journalists use Twitter and LinkedIn, of course. And you're probably reading financial news as a financial planner, and you've got a couple of, you know, favorite sources. You know, maybe it's, maybe it's the Wall Street Journal, which is kind of lofty. You know, the chances of getting quoted by the Wall Street Journal are a little harder unless you're, you know, a well-known financial planner. Maybe you read Forbes. Maybe you read, maybe.
But to your point, though, we have a lot of what I would call professional journals or trade journals, like Financial Planning Magazine or Advisor mm-hmm. Perspectives and all this kind of stuff, that those are usually insiders contributing to that particular magazine. And those are lofty thoughts that may, in some instances, serve consumers. And that's information you guys don't have. So that information could be disseminated in a palatable way for some quotes, I think, to the point you're making.
Right. You know, and if you, the thing too is you make the connections, you find the journalist, and you don't have to necessarily go for Wall Street Journal. There are plenty of other resources out there. There's NerdWallet, there's Go Banking Rates, there's Investopedia. Maybe you've got, a local business journal and they cover personal finance topics. Okay. So you follow those reporters on Twitter and you reach out to them on LinkedIn and you say, hey, so-and-so, read your article on whatever it is, thought it was great. I love to be a source for you. Don't just connect. Like if you make that connection on LinkedIn, don't just connect. Let them know why you want to connect. I'd love to be a source for you. Maybe even give them an idea for an article. Not the same as what they've just written, but say, oh, there's a new trend in whatever. I'd love to be a source. You can email me here. And then, you know, maybe reach out again if they don't respond. Journalists are busy. They might like your idea, but maybe they're not interested in that topic right now. But don't give up. Now, if you try a couple times and they're not paying any attention to you, then yeah, don't start stalking them and messaging them every single day. You don't want them to be scared of you. But, you know, try to make that connection. Reach out to a variety of journalists. And the key thing is be available. When my favorite sources are the people I can interview and say, hey, I am working on an article that's due at the end of the week. And I'm looking for 3 tips on easy ways to save for retirement. And they email me that day, or they say, look, I can't get to you today, but I can email you by tomorrow morning. And they give me those 3 tips. They, you know, write a short paragraph explaining, here's the tip, not just like tip and then don't explain it, but, you know, they provide me with some information and a quotable sentence. That's the key. You want to provide someone with a quote that they can use, you know, or hop on the phone, whatever. The people who say, oh yeah, I'd love to help, but I can't get to you this week. Then I say, I'm thinking, well, sorry, I can't use you as a source because I've got a deadline. That frustrates me. And I tell you what really frustrates me, and I know this is something that a lot of financial planners can't get around, but honestly, I hate it when they say, I have to run this by compliance. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? This is going to take a week or longer. Thanks for your offer to help me, but I really can't wait for compliance here.
No, I think, you bring up a real point. I think in this, and maybe this can be for your friends or colleagues listening to this, I think, and I don't want to step on any toes here, but at the same time, I've been in the industry for 20 years, so I've kind of earned that right. The further upstream you swim with the bigger shops, the more likely you're going to hear that as an issue where you have to run it by compliance. There are a lot of, not to say swim downstream, but there are a lot of independent RIAs that have a lot more or a lot less red tape to go through to provide you with a quote. Processes are a lot more streamlined, not as much, you know, bureaucracy there where they can give you a quote. So, you know, it's good to have maybe like quote from Goldman Sachs Personal Financial Planning, you know, that's great. Not so much as, you know, maybe not as known as DJH Capital Management in, you know, Dallas, Texas, but at the same time, the information is still good. So that may be just something to kind of think about, because the bigger the organization, the more compliance.
Right. You know, I would add too that the financial planners who like a lot of the large financial planning firms or the financial planners who I have seen grow a lot in the last few years, these are people who are quite active on social media and who make an effort to develop these relationships with the media. Like there's this, I think of one young financial planner I know who's in New York City, and he, I've just seen his, like he has just exploded online. Like you see him on, he's on Twitter all the time. He is, he's on TV all the time. Now granted, he's in New York City, so that makes it easier to go to CNBC studios and, you know, do an interview or whatever. But he makes a point of reaching out to journalists and connecting with them, whether it's, you know, reaching out to someone on Twitter or using LinkedIn or responding to Haro, the Financial Planning Association. If you are a member of the Financial Planning Association, they have a way that journalists can ask for sources through FPA. And yeah. I've used that too. And I've, you know, found plenty of great financial planner sources using that as a resource. So, but, you know, I've just watched this guy raise his profile astronomically just because he's put in some effort. And you might think, oh, well, you know, he's in New York. He must have a huge firm and he's got someone handling PR for him. No, he does it himself. And that's what journalists love too. I hate having to go through a PR firm because it's one other layer and I have to wait for them to email their client and then to hear back. It's so much easier for me to just connect with that financial planner personally rather than having to go through a PR agency. So no, you don't have to hire a PR company to help you either.
Sounds like a lot of this is just kind of roll your sleeves up, hard work. That, you know, if you want to build a brand that's noticed by the public, if you want to come, you know, what we call this local celebrity, then you've got to put the work in. And obviously one of the ways that you can do that is through the media. I want to take a somewhat of a right turn on this just to look at both sides of the argument, right? Because I know I've read articles before, and I don't want to name names because I don't remember who to attribute this to. But, you know, there's the whole thing around, okay, I'm an advisor. I'm going to try to, you know, kind of create my own brand, maybe start some of my ideation at my own blog, on my own website, or maybe through a site like Medium. What are your thoughts on that? Because I don't know if, you know, your industry or your colleagues kind of look at that as competition, because it's like, I don't know that we can just keep on requoting the same advisor through all these different sources. What would be your advice around if somebody wants to start their own ideas on their own blog, and if that's in conflict with trying to develop a relationship with the media?
I think it's a great idea to have your own blog, and no, it's not in conflict. I don't think the media look at financial planners' blogs as a source of competition. Now, granted, there are some personal finance blogs that have grown quite large, and they are competition, so to speak. But I don't think we're going to look at a financial planner's blog. And the thing, too, that you can do when you have a blog or if you have a newsletter, you're sending that newsletter to the journalist, and the journalist might get some ideas from it. Oh, hey, you know, I just got this, you know, my weekly newsletter or my monthly newsletter, and I didn't even know about this new trend in whatever, retirement savings. And so then you turn out, you know, you reach back to that person and you say, hey, I just got your newsletter. I'm really interested in this, you know, what you mentioned in your most recent newsletter. Love to do an article on this. It can't hurt. Having that blog can certainly raise your profile, and you're doing a service for your clients. You know, your clients might not think to ask questions about certain things while they're meeting with you, but if they're checking out the blog, they're reading your newsletter, then they're going to get additional information that might be of value to them. And that's a win-win.
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. I was definitely curious. In as far as method, I don't know that there's a good or bad with this, but nowadays you have all the different, let's say, you know, the noise of the internet, where if you don't know SEO and you don't know keyword research and all this other kind of stuff, you're like, oh man, who's going to be reading my blog? So it may be one of those labors of love for some time. Would you recommend, you know, maybe hopping on something like a Quora or a Medium to maybe boost that? Obviously, that's not the same thing as having your own blog, but I've seen some people obviously use those platforms just like other social media platforms because you're going to have more eyeballs there.
You certainly could try it. I think the issue that people run into is feeling overwhelmed if they're trying to do too many things. Okay, I'm going to do Twitter and I'm going to do Facebook and I'm going to do Instagram and I'm going to answer every personal finance related question on Quora so that people might happen to stumble back on my website. I think pick a couple of things, just a couple of outlets that you really want to focus on. And maybe that's, again, I think Twitter is a good one to focus on. It's easy because it's text. It's not Instagram, which is image driven, and you really have to put a lot more thought and creativity to it. You know, and if you've got that blog, you share a link on Twitter. You know, hey,
and a
just
quote
wrote
from
something.
The article, yeah, you're right.
Right, right. I just, you know, here, you know, I just wrote something on this, or you know, here's a piece. Or you know, another thing too, though, is when you see an article that you like that's written by a journalist, share it on Twitter. So-and-so, you know, Cameron Huddleston just wrote a great article on ways to save money on life insurance. Check it out. And you tag that person because journalists, you know, they want their article shared. And if someone else is doing the work for them, hey, that's great. It gets more eyes on their article and more clicks on the article. So, you know, don't try to do everything because you're going to get overwhelmed. You know, pick a couple of things that you want to focus on and put a lot of effort into it. If you're going to go the Twitter route, then you need to be on Twitter at least once a day. Maybe you start your day by, you know, sharing some articles that you've read and tagging the journalist who wrote it, sharing something that you posted on your own blog, sharing your thoughts, you know, and personal stuff too. I mean, I find that gets more notice than any article I share. I just shared on Twitter today about how I was, I tried to cancel my car radio service. And and of course, they do everything they can to keep you. And so, you know, I just shared, you know, tip of the day, if you want to save money on a subscription, threaten to cancel your service and they're going to like reduce your rates. And I ended up canceling anyway, but immediately I got like so many likes on that post as opposed to an article I shared earlier today, like one like. But personal stuff, people love it and people connect with it. So you don't feel like you have to be totally professional and I'm only going to talk about personal finance. Share your own experiences too. And that makes you more human and people are going to want to follow you more when you share those sort of things.
Amazing. People like humans. That's amazing. I love that notion. Attention career changers. Are you confused about what path you should take to become a financial professional? I've created a 12-week program called How to Find Your Place in Financial Services that you need to check out. I've taken my 20-plus years in the financial services industry and condensed it into 12 hours of instruction, a year-long subscription to my group coaching program, and a one-on-one career road mapping session with yours truly to get you started on the right path. Here's what other aspiring financial professionals are saying about their experience in this program.
You know, when I came into this, I kind of had like a blanket idea of what I wanted to do. And by going through the process, I was kind of able to tailor it a bit more. And
I don't mind paying for knowledge, paying for expertise, because you skip a lot of the fluff on the internet, because it's so much fluff and everybody's an expert on the internet. But when you actually have someone who's presenting this information to you in an organized way, like, I mean, it just helps you so much better.
You had the whole overview of what was the financial industry and what you had to do, the do's and don'ts when it came to the financial industry and what it really is.
And you were able to break that down really clearly in terms of educational experience, what to look for, what to expect. And that in itself has saved me a lot of time. That alone is just a diamond in itself. And I've been able to do that because of the course and the information you provided.
I'd love for you to join us in an upcoming cohort so that you can find your place in financial services. To learn more, go to www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. All right, let's get back to our conversation. You give me a great segue because I want to talk about personal branding, and I want to talk about, as we wind this down, personal story in your brand. I think as, you know, let's call it small business owners, which most RIAs and independent financial planners are, you don't have the luxury of relying on, you know, Fidelity or Goldman Sachs or Schwab as your name and your brand. Like, everybody just knows that. You have to win people over with your personal story. And so your book that you wrote involves a very personal story, which I hope you don't mind sharing, about your mom. And I think it just makes a couple of things. When I learned that, it just made me feel more connected to you at a human level. And I think it comes through in your writing. Obviously, you know, to the extent that you want to share stuff on social media, that can come out. And I think it's just a lot of ways to help attract the audience that resonates with that to you. And I wish more advisors would do it. Maybe could you give us a little information about maybe what prompted you to share that in the vein of a book? I know all financial advisors are not going to write books. I get that. But at the same time, sharing your personal story with whatever medium, podcast, live stream, post, whatever, blogs, you decided to do in a book. Talk about the power in using your personal story in order to boost your brand.
I think it's important because there are a lot of people out there who are trying to, if you are a financial journalist or a financial planner, who are trying to provide similar information. And people are going to listen to the people they can connect with. So my book was written because my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease at the age of 65. I was 35. And I had to step in and start helping her with her finances. I manage her finances entirely now. It has been more than 10 years since she was diagnosed. She is in the late stage of Alzheimer's disease, is in a memory care facility. And at the time, I had not had any detailed conversations with my mom about her finances. And so I had to play detective. I had to scramble to meet with an attorney to make sure all of her estate planning documents were in place, especially that power of attorney and healthcare proxy. And I was fortunate because I am a financial journalist, so I knew some things that I needed to do, but I also had to figure out a lot along the way. And it was funny. I was actually being interviewed for the Experian Credit Bureau podcast, and I had written an article, and this was before I wrote the book. I had written an article, I think related to, you know, helping parents with their finances or talking to parents about their finances. And it came up during the interview, and there were two hosts, and both of them, one younger than I am and one who was a little older, said, you know, I need to be having this conversation with my parents. And then the person who is recording the podcast afterwards said, I need to have this conversation with my parents. And there was another person in the room who said, I need, and it was funny, suddenly this like light bulb went off. And I was like, you know, I need to help people do this. I went through the process of, you know, having these conversations with my mom about her finances and figuring out all these details on my own. And I made a lot of mistakes, and I don't want people to make these mistakes. And so that's what prompted me to write the book. And there weren't any books like that out there. There are lots of books on caregiving, what to do once you are a caregiver, but you have to have these conversations before you become a caregiver. It'll make things a lot easier. And even if you never find yourself in a caregiving position, I mean, you're going to have to get involved with your parents' finances one way or the other. When they die, if they don't have a will, it's a lot harder to deal with what's left behind. And so I created this guide for people. And, part of it was establishing myself as a subject expert, creating this brand, you know, Cameron Huddleston, you know, family finance expert or expert, you know, about, you know, talking to parents about their finances. And so of course, writing the book was really the easy part for me because I'm a writer. Marketing it was the hard part, having to reach out to podcasters and having to reach out to the media, putting myself on the other side and saying, hey, do you want to interview me on this topic? And so I certainly understand the frustration that any financial planner feels when they're reaching out to journalists and it's, you just get crickets. because I sent a lot of emails and, you know, only got a few responses. And so it does take a lot of work, but it can pay off. It really can, because from, you know, I did a lot of podcast interviews, but then podcast hosts started reaching out to me. So after a while, you're not the one who's having to pitch yourself. They start coming to you. The journalists start coming to you. You know, the radio hosts, the podcast hosts, they start coming to you. I get financial planners coming to me, asking me to do webinars for their clients, and we can do it online. This is something that they probably wouldn't have done in the past. They wouldn't have paid to fly me across the country to come meet with their clients. Now I hop on a Zoom call and I spend an hour talking to their clients about how to have these money conversations and what information to gather from their parents. And you know, honestly, this has been a benefit of the pandemic because it's opened up some opportunities for me that might not have existed before, like I said, because, you know, how many financial planners want to pay to fly me across the country just to have a, you know, a special meeting with their clients. And so it did take a lot of effort to, you know, get my book noticed. And, you know, I still have to keep doing it, but it has paid off by creating other opportunities for me. And I think that financial planners who do put in that initial effort to get noticed by the media, and it might take a year or two to really establish yourself as a source, but once you've been quoted in several publications, like I said, the journalists are going to start coming to you, because whenever I write an article, I'm going to see what else has been written on the topic. And if I see that someone has been quoted, I might say, oh, that's probably a good source. I'm going to go look up their financial planning firm's website, and then I'm going to figure out how to contact that person. So make sure you have an easy way on your website for people to contact you, you know, your phone number, emails, you know, make it easy for people to contact you. But I do think putting that effort in can pay off. It's not guaranteed that you're going to get a lot of new clients or get new business. But I do think that if you are willing to put in some time, it can't hurt.
Now, there's so many things you said that I want to opine on. I'm just having to hold my tongue here. I think you bring up a lot of points. The first is that I think you have to enjoy the journey. None of this is going to be easy, right? And there is no guarantee. You said that directly. I think, you know, you have a great story, and for the people who that resonates with, and for the advisors that need you to have conversations with their clients, and for the people that want a step-by-step manual guide to help, you know, with their particular situation, it's perfect for that. And what I always tell or try to reinforce to financial professionals I work with is that all you need is to be relevant for the people that need you. Just your tribe. You don't need 100 million clients. You don't need, you know, you can build a pretty good practice and be important to the people that you're important to. And so I think that's kind of like the theme that I'm getting from what you're saying. I mean, the benefit that you have, I think obviously could stretch more than probably what you've seen, because to be honest, you know, having gone through the CFP curriculum, I have a master's in finance, I have my bachelor's in finance. We don't talk about that kind of stuff, right? We don't talk about how to have those conversations, the level of empathy and active listening and just general bedside manner that you need to have in order to have those conversations with your parents. Not until you actually experience it sitting down with your parents. You know, I'm speaking personally because I'm my own parents' financial planner. How you don't get the level of discomfort and, you know, just weirdness that can really do for you. And it takes practice. And I think, you know, that's kind of the theme of this whole conversation, is a lot of this is going to take practice. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take repetition. It's going to take, you know, you being able to be resilient when people tell you no for those couple of yeses that you're going to have, because you'll have 100 no's. But at the end of the day, you know, you can go back to your why and why you're doing this and probably find solace in that. I would love to close this conversation, Cameron, with the fact that this podcast is really created for the purpose of empowering tomorrow's financial professional with what I would call tools to serve their ideal client, right, at the next level. In that context, what word or words of wisdom would you like to leave with them?
I want to kind of get back to what we were talking about sharing your own story. I think it's important to be yourself. My favorite financial planners to interview are the ones who are themselves when they talk to me, who are relaxed, who are willing, you know, maybe to say things that are a little out there or don't censor themselves so much. Those are the people I feel like I have more of a connection to because they are themselves during their interviews with me. And I remember them. They stand out for that reason. They're willing to crack jokes or not take themselves too seriously. I mean, granted, if you take yourself very seriously and you're uptight naturally, you know, you don't have to force yourself to try to be funny because that's just going to be awkward. That's not who you are. But the people who let their guard down a little bit when they're talking to me, it shows. It shows that they're willing to trust in me and they're comfortable enough to say things maybe off the cuff. And I remember those people because I enjoy talking to them more because they are willing to be themselves and maybe offer up some personal information, share their story. And those are the people I do go back to time and time again because it's like the people you choose to be your friends, you're comfortable around them. And I want to interview people who are enjoyable to talk to because I'm going to take time out of my day to get on the phone and spend 30 minutes interviewing someone. You know, it's nice to have someone you actually enjoy talking to. So it is important to be yourself. Don't feel like you have to, you know, create some facade and make yourself sound like you're, you know, I don't know. Some more big lofty shot.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say more lofty than you actually are.
Yeah, you don't need to come off that way. It just, you know, just speak naturally. Don't try to use big words and fancy jargon because journalists don't like that anyway. Just be yourself and, you know, talk naturally. But I think that's important to remember. And that's going to get you a lot farther than trying to, you know, to be loftier than you are, to be the big shot, just be yourself.
No, I love that. Being yourself, being who you are, being authentic. Cameron Huddleston, really, really appreciate it. The book is Mom and Dad, We Need to Talk, How to Have Essential Conversations with Your Parents About Their Finances. Where can they find that book?
You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Also, if you go to my website, which is CameronHuddleston.com, there is a page there with information on how to order the book.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you for spending time with us today. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey there. I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now until our next conversation. Mm-hmm.